jump in. Okay, if, I'll just say this for anyone who might be watching online, or if you haven't caught all of the Jonah series, it will be very helpful before you, or if you want to go back and look at that, those, and then re-listen to this one, it'll be helpful. Because there's something that happens in the New Testament as it relates to Jonah, believe it or not. It's there. In fact, even Jesus talks about it. And it's very fascinating how it all pulls together. And if you've been through Jonah with us, then we've been through the entire book, and you're going to pick up on some themes pretty quickly as we come through this particular message today. But it'll be a little bit like drinking from a fire hose, so you won't have a lot of time to go back. But if you know the story of Jonah in general, or you've been with us all of the Sundays, maybe you're going to see something that I just found interesting. So this is a little bit of nerd out. Bear with us, or I should say with me. It's a little bit of a nerd out. So, but that's okay. I like doing nerd things. Hopefully you do too. We've been working on kind of taking this, you know, children's factor out of Jonah. And that's not to say that it's not a book relevant for kids. I think it works. But for those of us as adults, it's almost like when we become adults, we feel like maybe we've grown out of the book or the story of Jonah, right? I mean, you just kind of feel like you've grown out of it. And if you've been able to be with us through this series, I think one thing you can see right off the bat is it's not a children's story. It very much is a story that's really relevant for today. And there's a couple of things that I think we can see that Jesus and the gospel writers are going to unpack for us when it comes to Jonah. And especially because Jonah just comes to this abrupt end. If you were with us last week, it just ends abruptly. It's like you don't know where the conversation goes. It's almost as if a chapter got lost or something. You know, someone didn't get that version saved, and you just lost the work, and you had to turn the manuscript in, and that's it. It feels like there should be something more. And I think, this is my opinion, okay, I'm just going to preface that with, this is just my opinion, I think that something more is picked up in the Gospels. I think that something more is picked up right there. And especially around this sign of Jonah, okay? And that's what is going to get referred to. We'll see that in a couple of slides, this sign of Jonah, and what does that mean? And really, it's a question about what is the sign, this sign of God's love? How does he let people know that he loves them? And we're going to see how that's framed through the gospel story. And it's a good question, I think. It's an interesting question. What is the sign of God's love? If you've been a Christian for a long time, you might have a quick answer to that. But maybe there's a little more to it. Maybe this is actually tied back to a Hebrew Bible, an ancient Hebrew Bible story that had happened in the past. So here's what I want you to do as we go through this. If you've been with us through Jonah, you're going to have to work a little today, okay? I know, I just saw a few eyes be like, really? It's Sunday. No. Got to work a little bit with us today, because what we want to do is I want you to have Jonah in your mind, okay? All of the things that happened with him. He's called by God to do something, and what happens? He goes down, down, down. He goes down to Joppa. He goes down into the ship. He goes out into the sea. He goes down to lay down, and he goes down into Sheol, the place of the dead, okay? And there, that's where he finds himself in the whale. He has this prayer to God that is a prayer of hope that he's going to see God again, and the whale spits him out. God is able to command the grave to release Jonah. That's a very important theme. And Jonah starts over again, goes to Nineveh, gives the five-word message. Do you remember what that was? And Jonah, Nineveh, what happens? They flip. They just completely turn over and become righteous and trust God, and they're immediately not a wicked city. And Jonah is really happy about this? No, he's absolutely ticked off that these Ninevites, who were the enemies of Israel, would have any kind of experience with God, and he has it out with God. He absolutely just says, you're this loving, patient God, and this is what I knew you would do, and I hate it. And so they have this little tit and tat back and forth about a plant, and then it comes to an end. All of those have themes in it. And as we go through this, I want you to pick up on some of the themes. We're going to spend some time in the Gospel of Matthew and then a little bit in John. And here's what I want to ask you. There's a character that we're going to watch in here. And his name is Peter. Anybody remember Peter? He's one of the disciples. He's a guy just like me. Gets it right sometimes, gets it wrong most of the time. Has no problem speaking up. And do you remember how we meet Peter? Anybody remember how we meet him in the book of Matthew? Well, we meet him in that Jesus is walking along the sea. In fact, here it is. It's in Matthew chapter 4. While walking by the Sea of Galilee, Jesus saw the two brothers, Simon, who was called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. And he said to them, "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men." He meets Peter by the sea, into the sea. We're on the sea. They're in the boat. They're fishing. You might look at that and go, "Jeremy, you're stretching." Okay, well, maybe, but just wait. Just wait, because it gets more interesting. It gets very interesting. This is where Jesus finds Peter. And Peter is going to become critical to our story here in just a minute. And so what do? They follow him. They pick up their stuff, they follow him, they leave their trade of fishing, and they follow Jesus. And what happens? What begins to happen in Jesus' ministry? In Matthew, if you're reading through the author, how he's arranged Matthew, we go through all of the different, you know, blessed are the poor in spirit. He gives us the Sermon on the Mount. He has this great, huge chapter of teaching. He has some miracles. And the religious leaders of the day are a little irritated with this because he's sort of upsetting their system. Jesus is. Do you remember this? This happens all the time. Jesus just sort of pushes your world out of order. And you kind of react to it. And he's doing that to all of the leaders here. And some of these religious leaders, they're called scribes and Pharisees, want Jesus to prove he is who he says he is, which is the Son of Man. He is their Messiah. And they want some proof of this. This next slide might be a little hard to read. I'll read it aloud. Then some of the scribes and Pharisees answered Jesus, saying, "Teacher, we wish to see a sign from you." But he answered them, "An evil and adulterous generation seeks for a sign, but no sign will be given except the sign of the prophet Jonah. For just as Jonah was 3 days and 3 nights in the belly of the great fish, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and 3 nights in the heart of the earth. The men of Nineveh will rise up in the judgment with this generation and condemn it, for they repented at the preaching of Jonah, and behold, something greater than Jonah is standing before you." If there was ever a question as to whether Jonah was in the grave or not, Jesus answers that question right here, because he equates where Jonah is in the fish to where he's going in the grave. If there's ever a doubt about that, Jesus clears that up. But here's the sign he's going to give them, right? 3 days in the earth, the heart of the earth, and then he's going to be raised. They should have put that together, that the fish spit out Jonah. And Nineveh, think about this. If you're the leaders in Israel, and this man just said to you, the Ninevites, the Assyrians, are going to stand with you on the day of judgment, and they will be in a position to condemn you because they believed and you didn't. He's calling the Assyrians more faithful than them. It's a deep insult to them when he says this. It's no wonder why they didn't like him too much. And so what happens? This is Matthew chapter 12. So what happens? Jesus carries on. We see this scene where he goes and he feeds 5,000 men. Probably upwards of 8,000 to 10,000 people. Do you remember that? You've heard about that story before. And something interesting happens. We've been introduced to Peter, this fisherman. We've been introduced to Jonah as being a sign. And now we are going to feed 5,000. And something interesting happens. We go back to the water and back to the boat. Told you, it'd be like a fire hose. We're back in the boat again. After feeding the 5,000, immediately Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. So he's at the door. "Thanks for coming. Thanks for coming. Yep, we'll pray for you. Thanks for coming." Okay, he's doing that and he sends everybody else out. All right, And after he dismissed the crowds, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. But when evening came, he was there alone. Think Jonah in the themes. But the boat by this time was a long way from land, beaten by the waves, and the wind was against it. Is this triggering? Does this sound familiar in Jonah when he's on the boat and they're out and the waves are beating against it? In fact, Jonah's written in such a way that the boat, it's like the boat is contemplating, should I break up or should I stay together? It's almost like the boat has a life of its own. The waves are beating against it. They try to turn back to shore. The wind comes up against them. Coincidence? Coincidence? And in the fourth watch, essentially in the middle of the night, Jesus came to them, walking on the sea. Do you remember what Jonah said about Yahweh? I serve the one God who created the land and the sea. And here's Jesus showing he's over the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified and they cried out. It's a ghost. They cried out in fear, just like the sailors did on the boat. They were terrified and they cried out. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, take heart, it is I, do not be afraid. And who speaks up? Who speaks up? Peter speaks up. Lord, if it's you, command me to come out on the water. Oh, it gets better. So he said, come on, Peter. Come on. So he gets out of the boat. And he begins to walk on the water and come to Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and beginning to what? Sink. What happened to Jonah when he exited the boat? He sinks. He cries out, Lord, save me, which is essentially Jonah's prayer. And Jesus immediately reaches out his hand and took hold of him, saying to him, O you of little faith. Remember that phrase, O you of little faith. It'll be important. Why did you doubt? And when they got into the boat, the wind stopped. Do you remember what the sailors did as soon as Jonah went over and the storm calmed? They immediately worshipped Yahweh. And what do the occupants of this boat do? Those in the boat worship Jesus, saying, truly, you are the Son of God. Come on. Come on. I mean, come on. And so what happens at this point? Matthew continues writing through his gospel. We have some things that begin to happen. He feeds 4,000 people again. Okay, so we have another large feeding, some additional miracles. And the Pharisees and scribes come to him again and say, hey, give us a sign. It's almost like a repeat of what we've just read. And Jesus answers them. He says, you're still an evil and adulterous generation seeking for a sign, but no one's going to give you the sign except the sign of Jonah. So he left them and he departed. Now this is interesting because in chapter 12 is when Jesus answers the scribes and Pharisees and says, it'll be a sign of Jonah. And then we have right in the middle, chapter 14, literally right in the middle, we have this scene on the sea with him walking on water. And two chapters later, again, right in the middle, we have another sign of Jonah. Do you think the author is trying to perhaps bookend something and say, I want you to pay attention to who this is that we're talking about? It's almost poetic. And what happens next is really fascinating. They go out, do a few more miracles, and they're up in northern Israel, in Caesarea Philippi, up where the big hole in the rock was. They're way up north, up over there. And Jesus begins to ask his disciples some questions. And Jesus came to the district of Caesarea Philippi. He asked his disciples, who do people say that the Son of Man is? Perhaps this sounds familiar to you. And they said, well, some say you're John the Baptist, others say you're Elijah, and others say, well, maybe you're Jeremiah or one of the other prophets. And he said to them, but who do you say that I am? Which is an interesting way to say I'm the Son of Man. Did you catch that? Who are people saying the Son of Man is? Well, they say, but yeah, but who do you say I am? He's acquitted himself. And who answers? Peter. You are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus answered him, Blessed are you, Simon, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. And I tell you, you are Peter, tiny stone, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. As a quick reminder, this essentially what Jesus is saying is, remember, they're up at the mouth to the entrance of what they would consider the place of the dead. They're essentially at the mouth place of what we would essentially call hell, although that's complicated. That's really simplified. And he's saying, I'm going to build my church with you, and we're going to put it over this entrance to the gates of hell, and we're going to make this place where Satan lives his tomb. And he will not be able to beat the doors we build against it. But that blank spot, does anyone know, if you haven't cheated by looking it up, does anyone know what goes there? Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah. Come on. Come on. Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah. This is his family name. This is his father's name. It's not saying Jonah is his father, by the way. They're separated by like 7-8 centuries, okay? But what are the odds? His name is Jonah. Are you kidding me? And why doesn't Matthew introduce this to us right off the bat? Because it's been saved for this moment. And I mean, come on, he's a fisherman. What does Jesus say to him? Come on in, fisherman, and I'm going to make you a fisher of men. When you reel in the big fish, it's going to have people in it. Come on. This is hilarious. This is great stuff. Do you ever think the Bible could be this entertaining? But you have to read the stories out of the Hebrew Bible to be able to put this together, to really kind of follow what's going on. And do you remember when I said to you, let me ask this question. Jonah, son of Amittai, means dove, son of faithfulness. And what was it that Jesus got through telling Peter on the water as he's sinking? Oh, you of little faith. Come on. Come on. I mean, this is awesome. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. I think it's pretty cool. From that time, Jesus began to show the disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and on the third day be raised. You would think Peter, son of Jonah, could put this story together, right? But Peter takes him aside, begins to rebuke him, saying, Far be it from you, Lord, this shall never happen. Now let me ask you a question. We can look back over several thousand years and see what the death and the resurrection of Jesus meant. And it's the greatest act of kindness and mercy that could ever have been done, not just on behalf of his own nation of Israel, but on behalf of the world, any Gentile and believer, right? And he has to go through that. This is part of the plan. And what's Peter doing? He's rebuking this part of the plan. What did Jonah do? What was his great irritation? You're so kind and you're so loving and it drives me crazy. I just don't want to even be a part of this. And Peter, although he hasn't been able to put this together yet, I think the author, as he's looking back on these incidents and he's writing these kind of things, is kind of saying, hey, dear reader, remember when Peter, son of Jonah, got in Jesus' face, just like Jonah did? But he turned and said to Peter, Get behind me, adversary. You are a hindrance to me. And here we go. For you are not setting your mind on the things of God, but on the things of humans. And I think you could take this little verse and you could plant it right at the very end of Jonah. And it would be the message from God to Jonah. You continue to think like a human, and I can't seem to get you to think like me. You're concerned about you and what these people have done, and you don't think they deserve it, and you're thinking like a human. You're not thinking like me. This is the message. Isn't that cool? All right, we'll do just a couple more. Okay, bear with me. All right? Is that okay? Can we do a couple more? It's pretty good, isn't it? Yeah, it's pretty cool. Do you remember how Jonah honored God with his lips? I serve the living God and the one who made the sea. And clearly he doesn't because he's fleeing from him. Okay, but his words say that. Well, you know, Peter had his own moments that were similar to that too. When they're celebrating the Passover, which would turn into communion for us, they've finished and they begin to sing a hymn. So this is the night that Jesus is going to get arrested. And check this out. This is pretty cool. You got to love Peter, right? And when they'd sung a hymn, they're done eating. They went out to the Mount of Olives, and Jesus said to them, "You will all fall away because of me this night." It's not the greatest uplifting coach speech in history, but he's trying to be honest with them, okay? "For it is written, I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. But after I am raised up, I will go before you to Galilee." And Peter. Here's Peter, right? "Though they all fall away because of you, I will never fall away." And Jesus said to him, "Peter, tonight, at least three times, you're going to deny you even know me." And no, I won't do that. What does he say? Peter said to him, "Even if I must die with you, I will not deny you." And all the disciples jumped in and said, "Me too. Me too." You know, you see, some of you are giggling because you know how this one's going to end up, right? I serve Yahweh. Just like Jonah said. And how does that go? Jesus shows up. He goes into the Garden of Gethsemane. Remember this? And he's just exhausted and he falls on his face and he prays, saying, "My Father, if it be possible, can we change the plan? Let this cup pass from me, but if there's no other way, I'll do it. I'll follow your will." And he gets up and he comes to the disciples and found them, what? Come on. Who speaks up? Who needs to talk to? Peter, who's sleeping. Come on. "So could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit is willing." "I heard what you said, Peter. But the flesh, it's weak." Simon Bar-Jonah, sleeping on the job. We've never seen that before, have we? That's new. And so what happens? They're in the garden. Jesus praises three times. And the police come and they arrest him and take him out. There's this moment where Peter whacks off the guard's ear. Do you remember that? His answer is to show violence against his enemies. What was Jonah doing? He went outside of the city and he made a little camp to watch God cast hail of fire on top of the city and destroy it. All right? And so they arrest Jesus and they take him off to see the religious leaders where he's going to get interrogated. And what happens? Peter, he can't help himself, right? Funny, it's Peter. Peter is sitting outside of this area where Jesus is in being interrogated. And what happens? A teenage girl comes up to him and says, "You were with Jesus the Galilean, right?" But Peter denies it before them all, saying, "I don't know what you mean. I don't understand you. I'm just a simple fisherman." And when he went out to the entrance, another teenage girl saw him, and she said to the bystanders, "This is the man that was with Jesus of Nazareth, right?" And again, Peter denied it, this time with an oath. I swear, I don't know the man. And after a little while, the bystanders came up and said, "Certainly, because we're listening to your accent, you sound like you're from New Jersey. And we know Jesus was from there. It's betraying you. We know you're a Galilean." And then he begins to invoke a curse. So let me tell you how this goes. I swear on the temple. I swear on something. And then he ups it to a curse. May God kill me. I swear I don't know him. Pretty intense. Three times he goes, in this case, not down, but further out. Further out. In fact, you see it right here, right? I don't know the man. And immediately the rooster crowed. And Peter, it says, remembered the saying of Jesus, before the rooster crows, you'll deny me three times. And he went out into the darkness. He's out in the darkness now. Come on, Simon, son of Jonah. And so what happens? Jesus is crucified. He rises from the dead, and he begins to make some appearances to the disciples. Do you remember this? But they're kind of, you know, sparse. He shows up occasionally. You'll be having dinner, and all of a sudden he walks through a wall. Nothing unusual about that at all, right? But hey, I got a fun game. Put your finger in the hole, in my hand, right? He starts to show up in some places. And what happens is over in the book of John, the Gospel of John, John and Peter are out fishing. And Jesus is walking along the shoreline, and they don't know it's Jesus. They're fishing, and they can't catch anything. And Jesus hollers across the shore. Do you remember this? Hey, throw your net on the other side of the boat. They're like, we've been fishing all day. What good is it? It's like a six or eight foot boat. This is, what is that going to do? Trust me. They pull in all the nets. They cast on the other side. What happens? Thing fills up with fish. Fills up with fish. And it's at that moment that John, not Peter, goes, I know who this is. And this is what he says. The disciple whom Jesus loved therefore said to Peter, who's on the boat fishing, it's the Lord. And when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his outer garment because he was basically working naked. And he threw himself into the sea. Come on. The other disciples came in the boat, dragging the net full of fish, for they were not far from the land, just about 100 yards. They weren't far out there. And when they got out on land, they saw a charcoal fire in place with fish laid out on it and bread. And Jesus said to them, hey, bring some of the fish you caught. Bring some of the fresh stuff. Right? Who knows where Jesus' fish came from? So Simon Peter went aboard and hauled the net ashore full of what kind of fish? Great fish. We ate fish out of that, and it's large on the plate, but I mean it might be about like that, the St. Peter fish, right? Maybe. Great fish. Come on. If you're not picking it up, I don't know if I can help you. Okay? And what happens next? Even John wants us to tie something together. When they'd finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, he uses the Greek name Jonah. Do you love me more than these? And he said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And Jesus said to Peter, feed my lambs. He said to him a second time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? And he said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Then tend to my sheep. He said to him a third time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? And Peter was grieved. It hurt him because he said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. And Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. And after saying these things, he said, follow me. Do exactly what I tell you to do, Simon, son of Jonah. Who are we feeding? If we're a follower of Jesus, we sort of get pulled into this story a little bit. And who are we feeding? Everyone, including Ninevites, including all the ones that we would really not want to. And Peter, as it would turn out, would struggle with this concept a little bit. In fact, those of you who have been through the Acts study with Jay, you'll know that in chapter 9, 10, and 11, there's this thing that happens with Peter, where Peter's kind of behaving one way with the Jews, but he's behaving in a different way with the Gentiles. And God's like, I got to get through to him. And so he gives him a vision. He gives Peter a vision that basically says, what you think is unclean, these Gentiles, I've made clean. And I'm sending you to the Gentiles. 9, 10, and 11. Jay, spot check. Where did Jonah go down to when he before he got on the boat? Do you remember? Joppa. Where was Peter in Acts 9, 10, and 11 when this happened? Joppa. Coincidence. It's a coincidence. And you know what else happened in Joppa while he's there? There's a resurrection while Peter's in Joppa. And he gets the vision to say, take my message to the Gentiles. Just like the Ninevites. Do you think this is all by accident? Does it ring a bell? And what does this feeding do? We talked about this last week. You learned a Hebrew word, which I figure you probably forgot by now because by yesterday I'd forgotten which one it was. Jonah's message was, in 40 days, Nineveh will be hapucked. It will be turned over. In Jonah's mind, and even in the Ninevites' mind, that meant they were going to be destroyed. But the word we saw last week has a double meaning. It can mean that mourning, pain, can be turned into joy. It can be turned into something else. It turns over a person's heart. And what's interesting is that we see Peter continuing to give this message of the gospel, and people are changing. They're responding to it. All through Acts, we see people becoming different people as they learn more about what it means to follow Jesus and how to love other people. And what happens when many, many hearts changes? It's what happens. When you can get enough people to follow and their hearts begin to change and they begin to realize why they're here, that they're an image of the living God and that they're meant for so much more. And what's interesting is that this very thing is actually used again in Acts 17. Again, those of you who went through Jay's Acts study should know this, but you didn't. I didn't warn you about a pop quiz. Paul and Silas are out on their journey, and they're spreading the gospel, and they're having great success, and they find themselves in a place called Thessalonica. We have a letter written to them called Thessalonians 1 and 2. And they're spreading this message of God, and when they get into the city, people would just, especially the Jewish leaders, just really would react poorly to this. And so it would stir up all this kind of trouble, and that's usually when Paul and others would get arrested. And these people who didn't like what Paul and Silas were doing with the gospel, when they accused them before the officials, they used a fascinating, Luke records a fascinating phrase. These men, followers of Jesus, who have done what? Turned the world upside down. Hapocked it. Through the gospel. Through the message of Jesus. Come on. We think Jonah is just this simple little 4-chapter book that's a children's story. And I'm here to tell you, I believe it is way more than that. It tells us how our heart responds to other people, how we're selfish, and how we want to do. We think about how a human thinks instead of considering how God would see something. And that in that, the whole book ends simply to say, which way are you going to go? That's why there really isn't an ending until you get to the gospel. And I don't think Matthew could have given us any more clues than to say, pay attention to Peter, son of Jonah, and what happens to him, how he wrestles There's this moment where, if you remember, there's some enemies, some people who are disturbing Jesus, and the disciples would say something like this, hey, Lord, should we call fire down from heaven on them and consume them all? What was Jonah waiting for? Do you see? Do you see? In order to change the world, it's about taking this message of God's love and patience and kindness, and it has the ability to change the world, to turn the world upside down, to hapak the whole thing. How does Jonah end? Exactly like this. This is the ending when you have people who are faithful to God and faithfully following him and doing what he's asked them to do. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, I want to thank you for somehow over nearly a millennium of pulling this content together in Scripture in such a way that you're communicating what seems to be a simple message, a simple parable of Jonah, and you're communicating that to us through the Scriptures of Jesus, through the Scriptures of the New Testament writers. Father, my prayer is that we would be tuned in to what it is that these writers want us to understand, and that we would have the courage, like they did, to go and do what you asked them to do, that we would have the courage to do what you've asked us to do, that we would find a way to allow our hearts to be hapacht, to change, that we would be able to see the world as you see it. Father, we love you, we thank you, we ask this in the name of Jesus. Amen.